Welcome to You Are Not Broken, the only podcast that combines science, medicine, and psychology to re-educate your brain and help you live your best love life. And I'm your host, board-certified female urologist, Dr. Casperson. Hey family, it's Kelly. I am so excited to be recording a podcast all by myself. I love interviewing people. I think interviewing people is super fun, but interviewing, like podcasting myself, just talking to myself, looking out the window, I don't know. It doesn't feel as like engaged. So I just pop up Instagram and then we can tell people, they can bring in questions if they want. But I'm so excited for you guys to join me today. I am just having a lot of thoughts and I'm reading a new book. And my new book is called, There's two desire books. So it's super confusing. There's Reclaiming Desire and Barry McCarthy's book, totally blanking, Something Desire. I need to Google this. We'll figure this out. Barry McCarthy Desire book. Rekindling. Okay, so there's Rekindling Desire by Barry McCarthy, and then there's Reclaiming Desire, and that is by Goldstein, Andrew. So I'm starting Rekindling Desire, which is in its third iteration version of books. This guy, he's mostly retired now. He writes a lot of books with his wife, and he has written like 21 books, which is insane because I'm writing one book right now, and I'm like, oh my God, 20 other ones? This is crazy. So super impressed to anybody out there who's ever written a book before. So he talks a little bit about sexless marriages, and part of my spiel is to like never tell people what normal amounts of sex is, right? But for like research purposes, they've actually defined what a sexless marriage is. And it's less than, so low sex marriage, substitute, you know, long-term relationship for marriage, whatever you want to do. But low sex marriage is less than 24 times in a year. So you have to have sex twice a month consistently to be normal in a long-term married relationship, according to the researchers. This is like not me passing judgment on anybody. And then a sexless marriage is defined as less than 10 times a year. So less than once a month is considered a sexless marriage. You don't have to be zero to live in a sexless marriage. And what he said is the longer you go, I think he said after like, again, this is Barry McCarthy in Rekindling Desire, the longer you go and not address it, it just keeps like building on itself and getting worse and worse and like the hiccups that people get in, right? So he was saying like after, I think it's 6 months or a year, if after it's that long and you don't address it, it gets very, very difficult. And this is very important in my week because I saw a woman who hasn't had intercourse with her male partner in 5 years, right? So she comes to me and hasn't had sex in 5 years. Somebody told her she had prolapse or a little bit of vaginal laxity. So she comes in thinking that I'm going to do surgery to help her have sex again, right? And it's like, No. There's no surgery that's going to get you back in the bedroom with your partner. And she had very, very mild prolapse. She was actually not surgical whatsoever. She had very, very tender pelvic floor muscles. So remember, the pelvic floor is a whole bunch of muscles that you can't see. You can't like flex them except for the Kegels. And they hurt if you hit them or penetrate them or bounce against them or just engage them during sexual intercourse in some people. So she had very tender pelvic floor. A doctor who knows what they're doing on a pelvic floor exam, especially if the pelvis has a vagina. So it's very easy to palpate obturator internus, all puborectalis, all of the muscles that make up this bowl of pelvic floor muscle. You can actually tap on them and feel that they're tight. You can feel trigger points. And then the person will be like, oh yeah, that's what hurts when I have sex, right? So they can like tell you that's painful. Whereas a pelvic exam in anybody is uncomfortable. Like, God bless. I totally get that. But a painful pelvic exam, I would say, is abnormal. Especially if the clinician who's doing it is very, very used to doing it, that, you know, they understand that this is awkward, it's uncomfortable, but like if you actually can elicit pain on it, then there's something going on. So for this woman, I said, you need two things. You need pelvic floor physical therapy and you need a sex therapist. And she came into my office thinking I was just going to give her surgery so she could have sex again, right? Like, talk about a mismatch in what the person went to the doctor expecting and what the doctor told you, right? So she's very much like, this is a very big deal. I haven't had sex in 5 years. And I'm very much like, you have very tight pelvic floor muscles and you have a ton of baggage because it's been 5 years and it hurts putting things in your vagina. That requires therapy. Also, she had very, very high anxiety. It's anxiety provoking coming to a doctor anyways, right? But like, if your anxiety is that high and you can't focus and she was pretty adamant that she wasn't going to do physical therapy. To me, I'm like, I don't have a magic wand, you guys. Like, I literally know what helps people get better. And I'm pretty good at, getting to that quickly at this point. I'm not like wondering what to do for this lady. I'm like, this is what she need. She didn't want that. I'm like, she's not going to get, like, I had this mentor when I trained in Denver. And she was so good. She's like, I can basically tell if somebody's going to get better or not. Like, we're not perfect. We're just humans too. But you can tell by somebody's like attitude and beliefs and like engagement in doing a plan if they're going to get better or not. And I have to tell you at this point, like, I'm pretty good at it too. I'm like, she's not going to get better. She's going to go home thinking I did nothing, right? Because she went in thinking I was just going to help her out. Okay, so a question is separate from this lady. Does masturbation help in maintaining tissues? I think masturbation does a couple of things. Number one, it makes you really good at knowing your body. It makes you really good at knowing what works for me fast, what works for me slow, what's a hell yes, what's a hell no. That wasn't supposed to rhyme, but that was very Dr. Seuss-y. And I always, I think it's always a slippery conversation because I never want somebody to have sex or masturbate just to like stay in shape because it really becomes a should for a lot of people. And like, shoulding is not sexy at all. Right. But what can I say, like, masturbation's good for you? Absolutely. Like, it's great for stress relief. It's great for, just the body getting healthy, pleasurable endorphins. Are you providing blood flow, arousal, pelvic floor muscle contractions? Absolutely. So I'd say like masturbation's, there's no reason not to do it, but if you're doing it in a like eight fruits and vegetables a day and 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise and 8 hours of sleep, like if you have it on your like to-do list, like masturbate, you're like, nah, god damn it. I just have to masturbate too. Like, that's not sexy. So it's always like, I always have to make the answer to that question a lot longer than maybe somebody, if I was just like, yes, or if I was just like, no, because it's nuanced in that way. So I hope that that helped. And the other thing, but what this lady, the sexless marriage lady, is that day in my clinic, I had to tell three women they weren't allowed to put penises in their vagina. And it's like, when you think that that's what sex is, right? And if you think that's what like your partner just needs and expects, and you have no other plans for what to do, like, and when your paradigm or your heterosexual sex paradigm is penis goes in the vagina, and then your doctor's like, nope, because they were having pain. They were having like arousal issues. They were having like lack of pleasure on their part. Studies show women have orgasms 30% of the time when a penis goes in the vagina. So I know that that technique isn't what's mostly pleasurable for women. So for me to say, take that off the list, like it's not helping you right now. It's hurting you. It's not giving you pleasure. Just take it off the list. There's so much pressure to put penises in vaginas that it drives me absolutely crazy. It's like make it a goal, but like until you make sex about you and you make it about pleasure, and you are communicating to your partner about everything, like you just get a doctor to tell you don't put the penis in the vagina. It's not serving you at this point. So that was quite the day. But I mean, you have to realize the disconnect, right? Like I'm to the point where it's like I know too much about sex and sexuality to like try to help these women just solve, like they're all they want is to like not have pain and put the penis in the vagina. And it's like, in order to do that, we have to do so much work, right? We have to do physical therapy. We have to do sex therapy. We have to work on your pleasure. We have to work on, communicating with your partner, all that stuff. And it's like, there's no pill to just be like, have an orgasm by putting the penis in the vagina. So that's that thought. Does stimulation with fingers increase chance of infection? No, it shouldn't. It's your body. Like, wash your hands beforehand, but like, no, it shouldn't. That's a myth. That's a masturbation myth. Okay, so I wanted to go over two articles because I'm a nerd. The first one is by American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists, so ACOG. And the middle author is Dr. Fuller, who I actually did my general surgery rotation in Minnesota with. So she's an OB-GYN. And it's a current commentary on testosterone therapy in women. So basically, this is an awesome article, again, helping educate providers and women that testosterone is normal in us. Testosterone declines with age. Testosterone declines more kind of like a slow linear decrease than like you have menopause and your estrogen goes from like okay to zero, which is a more dramatic drop than what testosterone is. And what this paper says, because people are very not clear on this, the global consensus on the use of testosterone in women, which is endorsed by multiple international societies, is clear that the use of pellets does not represent appropriate care. People are getting super high dose. People are getting irreversible side effects. Also, they're very, very expensive. So I don't make any money off of pellets. I don't give women pellets, but I give women testosterone. But I think what's marketed and sold is pellets. So the biggest marketing company for it is Biote. So the US Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, released a letter referencing the lack of reporting of more than 4,200 adverse events, including endometrial cancers, by the Biote medical company based in Irving, Texas, that provides bioidentical pellet therapy. So we'd have studies that show that compounded hormones are at a much higher dose. Higher is not always better, you guys. We want to give you some estrogen and testosterone, but not super, super high doses. Super, super high doses have more side effects, right? And so that's what we find. Compounded products have more side effects. That's why we don't like them. But soapbox for like 1 second. Traditional, regular, your regular doctor, they're so crappy at giving hormones to women that women are kind of like pushed to these hormone longevity clinics where it's thousands of dollars. They do these saliva tests, which are not recommended because they're not accurate. And it's funny, you know, like I volunteered in Africa a while ago, and there wasn't a lot of resources and a lot of patients. They just wanted an x-ray of things because they thought like the x-ray was going to be able to tell them more than what the doctor said, right? And I see that same thing in women and hormones. Like they just want their hormones checked because their hormones are just like their labs are just going to tell them something. And I'm like, well, the guidelines say go by how you feel. Like you can check them, they can be useful sometimes. But it's like, how do you feel? Are you having hot flashes? You have hot flashes. Okay, well, you have low estrogen then. I don't need to check your blood for that, right? So, yeah, the Dutch testing is the saliva testing, which people make money off of this. I don't. And it's saliva testing. They're notoriously inaccurate. And if you get on a hormone regimen that works for you, you don't need to keep checking your hormones, you guys. Save your dollars. I want you guys to all save your dollars and then someday buy me a coffee. For all the dollars that you can save. So that's what Dutch testing is. People get super into it, checking all your numbers. And it's like, how do you feel? You don't need a lab test then. Just like my African patients, and you don't need an x-ray. Feel good. The exam doesn't show a broken arm. Don't need an x-ray. One woman said she did the saliva test, it was $400. Ridiculous. Ugh. Does testosterone therapy cause hair loss? It can, especially if you're doing super high. And, you know, super high doses like the Biote pellets and stuff like that. So, this is a super good article, and I'll just wrap it up. So, we're going to talk about libido and testosterone here. So, decreased libido or desire can be seen in women throughout their reproductive lives and is a response to any number of complex stimuli. Remember, you guys, you can't just go to a surgeon, have an operation, and have sex again. Complex stimuli, including psychological, psychosocial, relationship, and physical health studies. So there you go. Testosterone does have a role in treating postmenopausal women with hypoactive sexual desire disorder. So there are a good amount of studies on that. So it says that there is also evidence for estrogen's role in sexuality and that estrogen replacement should be considered in all menopausal women with this symptom, especially if they are symptomatic from menopause. So low libido, think about your hormones, especially if you're perimenopause, postmenopause. But then remember, low libido and decreased desire is multifactorial. Going back to that book of Reclaiming Desire. It's complicated. And the thing, I really like this Reclaiming Desire book. The thing I don't like is, because he's a sex therapist, is he really pushes, like, you have to see a sex therapist, you have to see a sex therapist. And to me, I'm like, I have like five sex therapists in my town, which is amazing, and they're all completely booked. I can't get my women to see them at all. So to just tell somebody that they need to see a sex therapist is like, they're very, very useful tools, but I think there's a lot you can do before you see a sex therapist, to optimize your health, to start learning how to communicate, to start reading the books, to start learning about what normal female sexual health is, all of that. Because if I just had to tell my ladies, like, I'm not going to put you on vaginal estrogen or hormones or whatever until you see a sex therapist, is like, there's not enough sex therapists in this world to help all the people who are having trouble with sex. How do you know if you just need estrogen and or progesterone? If you have a uterus, you need progesterone if you're taking systemic estrogen. So I have other podcasts on that. I will refer you to that, or you can ask your provider. Esther Perel has great videos for couples therapy going back to that. Yes, you can do a lot with what Esther Perel has on YouTube. Her book Mating in Captivity is freaking fantastic for low desire. I love it. And that will bring me to my last article for this podcast today. This one is The Relative Effects of Hormones and Relationship Factors on Sexual Function of Women Through the Natural Menopause Transition. So natural menopause just means you didn't have your ovaries removed surgically. So what they did is they took 438 Australian-born women and they followed them for 8 years. And what they did was they tried to figure out like what was good for maintaining good sexual response and sexual function. And they said hormones are important, but prior sexual function and relationship factors are more important than hormonal determinants of sexual function in midlife women. So you can't just say go on hormones if you don't work on the relationship stuff, if you don't work on the sex stuff. That's why this topic is so wonderfully complex and why I love it, right? And why all of my answers tend to be long. Because if I just say, like, yes, no, you always need this for that, blah, 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 like, it's too short. And I think Esther Perel does a very good job, too. Like, she won't give you a short answer for like a long, complicated problem. Is like, I can tell you to go on hormones, but if you don't figure out the relationship stuff, your body image stuff, your sex shoulding and shaming stuff, like, it's all super important, too. So that is my love for you guys today. Thank you for joining me. Follow me on Instagram at Kelly Casperson MD. The website's kellycaspersonmd.com. Scroll down to the bottom. I'm going to move it to the top because I want more people on my email list, because that's how I send like ahead of time alerts of when I'm going to do a live podcast recording. And I also do like book links and stuff like that. So I'll do a book link to the two desire books, right? Like Reclaiming Desire, Recover Your Desire. I don't know. They're too similar. I'm having trouble. I love you guys so much. Thanks for all the new follows on Instagram. It's been an amazing week as far as climbing the ranks, and I just give all my love back to you guys because I don't like talking to myself. So love you so much. Until next time.